Welcome back to Medical Mum's Chat About Burnout. I'm Beck Lettingham, rural generalist, single mum, amateur podcaster, founder of Medical Mums, and I'm burnt out. Have been for a little while and decided to set about finding out more about this and to chat to some people about their experiences and what they've learned along the way. In this episode, we meet Dr. Amy Imms, the creator of The Burnout Project, www.theburnoutproject.com.au, GP and mother of five. Amy has amassed a great deal of knowledge about burnout through experiential learning and also her own research. And we thank her very much for spending some time. As always, there's some resources in the show notes if you recognise that you might be burning out or burnt out, and we hope that you get the help you need to turn it around.
Yeah, I'm Amy Imms, and I used to work as a general practice registrar. And do you want me to go into my burnout history? So it was about two-thirds of the way through my training that I really started to notice that I was struggling, and it was just a whole bunch of different things at once. So, and that's what I often see in burnout, it's not just one thing. So I was trying to study for exams. I had four children under four at that stage. I was the primary breadwinner, working 3 days a week, and then I had the kids the other days, and there were lots of other things going on as well. Like, I was supporting my mum through breast cancer treatment. I had a patient who took their own life. It was the anniversary of the death of one of my best friends from when I was younger, and all of these things came together, and I had some health issues as well that were unrelated to that. And I really picked it up not very quickly. It took me a long time. It was really slow onset, as it often is, and it wasn't till I was sitting there one day and really realized that I was feeling like, what was the point in all of this, and would the world be better off without me? Would my kids be better off without me? And those kinds of thoughts that I thought, hang on, what's going on here? Why am I feeling like this? And I wasn't particularly depressed, but it was just this pile up of all these different stresses that left me in a really bad place. And from there, yeah, I decided to do something about it. Mm-hmm. And that was a long, difficult journey. Something that I wouldn't like to go through again. But, you know, burnout's one of those things that you don't sort of get through it and then that's it forever. But there's always ups and downs and that sort of maintenance and keeping things on track.
And so what did you notice? What were your kind of collection of symptoms?
Fatigue, difficulty or reduced empathy with some types of patients. As I say, just that feeling of loss of usefulness in the world, or feeling that I wasn't as valuable as I used to be to the people around me who were important. They'd be the main ones. Mm-hmm. And then with things like trying to study, definitely difficulty with concentration as well.
Yep. And what did you do when you hit that point? What was your what worked for you, and how did that look?
Yeah, so it took me a while to find something that worked. I initially saw my GP and I took a bit of time off work. I got a referral to a psychologist, and I didn't really feel like I was making as significant progress as I hoped to. And so then it ended up being quite a long journey of investigating burnout myself and spending a lot of hours reading about it and implementing lots of little things that came up through that. And so it was actually probably 5 or 6 months before I really felt like I'd found what worked for me. And it was a combination of lots of different things, partly exploring what medicine meant to me, where I found my identity. Was that from medicine or from other aspects of my life? What those sort of really core values were, and that how that tied into my work. It also meant just revisiting why I was doing medicine, and what was the point in all of that, and what was that long-term direction, and was what I was doing just because it was default, or was it actually what I wanted to be doing with my life? And then all the little things that we often hear about, you know, making sure that I was actually taking time to take care of myself and feed myself and not just focus on, you know, the good nutrition for my kids, but what am I actually eating, and am I taking that time and energy to stay active? Am I doing little things that I enjoy? I think a lot of us, when we're busy from when we start work as interns and beyond, we lose those little sort of fun, creative parts of life. And so when I started doing art and writing and things like that again, then I really found that joy from life again.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it was a long thing and lots of different elements that tied together. And then I've managed to keep most of those going with little ups and downs since then.
And how much time did you take off? Because there's a big variation on how much time people feel like they need to just step away for.
Absolutely. I initially only planned to take about 6 weeks off, but there were lots of complicating factors there, as often probably people find with financial influences and things. So it just happened with me that because I didn't have any income while I was off, because I was working in general practice, my husband had to increase his hours. And then I unexpectedly got pregnant again. So I had a fifth child on the way. And that just made it really tricky, because for me to go back to work, my husband couldn't drop his hours again to look after the kids, and I had maternity leave coming up, so I ended up having to stay off work, and by then I was running out of GP training time, so it all just became really complicated. So in the end I had about 6 months off, and then I was on maternity leave, and during my maternity leave is when I started doing my burnout work. So from then on with my infant. So I suppose I was back at work in a sense from very early on after I had my fifth child. So after about 6 months off work, but it was a very different kind of work to what I'd left.
Mm-hmm. And tell us a bit about your burnout work.
So that's evolved a lot over the years, and it came out of what I'm saying about that journey for me. I found it really difficult to get that help that I wanted, and I felt initially, you know, oh yeah, I'll see my GP, take a bit of time off work, get a referral to a psychologist, that'll get on top of things. And I didn't have that great experience, and I felt like a lot of the treatment that I could find wasn't really specific to burnout. And as I discovered, the more I looked into it, you know, having quite a different approach being recommended for burnout compared to anxiety and depression and things. And so I wanted to give other people that sort of support that I found such a long time trying to get. And so it started off with me feeling like, well, if I'm going to be at home with another baby lying on the couch, breastfeeding and getting them sleep in the evenings, I may as well be productive with that time. So that's when I started writing my book. And then that slowly evolved from there. So then I started seeing people for burnout counselling, and I do a lot of talking with medical students and with intern groups and medical conferences, but also more broadly than that. So I'm often talking to people more in the business sector and all sorts of things. Like even I've had people running crafting kind of groups who'll get me to come along and talk to them about that tie-in of creativity and mental well-being. So yeah, it's evolved a lot over the time. And even with my work one-on-one, helping people, that's evolved a lot. And you know, I think all of us as doctors probably learn a lot from our patients as we go and adapt and learn new strategies. And so yeah, that's been a big journey for me, feeling like I'm a lot better at helping people now than what I was 5 years ago when I first started, with that initial knowledge and the skills that I brought from general practice.
And where can people find out more about your book and your services?
At theburnoutproject.com.au. And yeah, on there, there's a little burnout quiz, which is one that I've sort of come up with, that it's not like a formalized one, like the burnout inventory or anything like that, but it's just one that I find people find helpful to stop and think about how burnout's affected them. And then it's got links on there to the burnout book and burnout packages. So sometimes people order a package with the book, but then also some nice soaps and tea and journals and other things that they can help use for self-care. And then the counseling and things are on there as well.
And how do you keep yourself from burning out now? What's your techniques in your life at the moment?
Yeah, as I mentioned before, it's a very up and down thing, and I think we all go through phases where it sort of hits us that things are not quite in that right sort of balance that they should be in. But overall I feel like I do a pretty good job now of being on top of that, and it's a combination of making sure that I'm doing things that really feel meaningful to me and fulfilling to me. So in my work, I try to really just choose the opportunities that I feel like I'm really helping people. I work with my clients in a way that I feel like is most useful to them, and then balancing those other sides of my life. So I need a certain amount of time with my kids to feel like I'm giving them what they need, and then taking that time for myself. So yeah, it's that balance of what am I doing with work, what am I doing with my kids, what am I doing for myself, and then maintaining all those little things like your friendships. And it's really hard, you know, none of us has time for all those kinds of things. So it is natural that things are going to go in ups and downs, and you can't have life in some perfect balance all the time. But it's, I think, just knowing yourself well enough that you can recognize those things and recognize when something needs to change a little bit. And it's not just those practical sides of life either. And, you know, looking on paper, how am I dividing up my time and what am I doing with my work? But it's all that internal work as well. How am I thinking? What are my thought processes, and how am I responding when stressful things happen? And how much does that then affect my day? So it's building a lot of mental skills and strategies as well.
When you talk to people, do they have a lot of musts and a lot of can'ts? Because I think must and can't should be probably deleted from the dictionary when you're talking about moving forward from a place of burnout. But I feel like there's this, there are these beliefs that we hold on to about what we can't do and what we must do, that we don't let anyone challenge, including ourselves. Is that something that you come across in your clients?
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think often people haven't even recognized that. You know, if you ask them what their must and can'ts are, it's probably not something that a lot of people could just reel off. Mm. And they've developed at such a young age often as well. You know, I've talked to people and they've really developed this sort of strong self-concepts and ideas that they feel like they should behave or they should do. And it's been since they've been 4 or 5 or 9 or 10 that they really can't even remember a time without it, and don't realize that actually life doesn't have to be like that. It's just that default that they've grown to accept. And yeah, I agree, having those things challenged and rethinking them can be a really critical part of that process.
And I feel like a lot of them are financial, so I think a lot of people think they must keep earning at this rate, or they must, you know, they can't possibly live on less, or, you know, and a lot of people that I've spoken to in recording for these podcasts have found out that they can earn less and life doesn't kind of fall in a heap, and surprise, surprise, you know, we're actually quite well, you know, we earn reasonably well, but we can actually probably negotiate our lives in a different way.
Yes, I totally agree. And I think a lot of the time it's the expectations that others have as well, that we sort of often get used to a certain level of income and then expect to be able to, you know, set aside this amount for our retirement and do this and have the kids in private school, whatever it is. And think, oh, there's no way I could change any of that. But looking at that trade-off, and when you recognize what you're losing to have that, then often, yeah, as you say, when people actually look at it and think about it and try changing it, it actually does work. And not just that financial expectation for ourselves, but I think the expectations from others, a lot of it comes from a expectation what they think their parents think they should be doing, what society thinks they should be doing. And they can be so hard to get past, especially the parents and family thing, where people feel so deeply those opinions of people around them, or the opinions of other doctors. You know, we often go through the hospital system seeing people who just put medicine before everything. That's their entire life. You know, they spend day and night there and care so much for the patients and doing so much to be able to step back a little bit and see medicine as just one part of life and as a career, but not our entire being and our entire entity, for some people is really difficult.
Mm. So I think there'll be people listening who recognize and nod along and have been through similar things. But I wonder if how many people will think after listening to a few people talk about their experiences with burnout, oh, maybe this is me. Maybe that's why this has been happening to me. If there was somebody in that kind of recognition phase of thinking about why things haven't felt quite right for a while or whatever, what would your tips be for them?
My number one tip would be to do something about it immediately. and whether that's just telling somebody you know about it, you know, a family member, a friend, someone that you really trust, whether that's straight away going to see your GP, I think that's a really important part of it, is seeing a GP or somebody who's a lot more objective than a friend or just trusting yourself. Because if you've recognized it, then it probably has been going on quite a long time, and it's probably worse than what you think it is at that point. Because as I say, it does come up really slowly, and we're so resilient and strong, and we want to be able to do everything that recognition that we're struggling can be downplayed by our own minds. So getting somebody else to really look at things and make sure that we're getting that objective assessment, because some people need somebody else to say to them, you know, you need time off. You know, this isn't something that you can slowly deal with a few strategies over the next 5 months, but this is something, you know, that you're really struggling with, and this is really affecting things more than you think, and you need time off. So having somebody else to do that assessment of how severe are things and what should you do first, I think is really important. And I think it's also really important to find somebody who is familiar with burnout in particular, and having them as a part of that process, because it is so different to the mental illnesses that people have often got training in.
And what about life after burnout? Is there some silver linings?
Oh, absolutely. The number of people that I see who go from really, really struggling to finding things so much more manageable is really uplifting. And it often does take time. You know, it's not sort of a quick fix. Certainly, you know, the people that I've seen once or twice for counselling, it's really hard to get anywhere. But the people who I see for 3 months, 6 months, or even longer than that, you know, it's really encouraging to see the progress that they make. And it's not one of those things that's sort of a linear line of improvement either. It's really encouraging when you see these real breakthrough moments, and that can come from all sorts of places. Sometimes it's that realization of how they got to the point that they're at, something really clicks in that. And other times it's, you know, as they're making changes, seeing that difference that those changes make. And for other people, it's because they make that decision that, you know what, this isn't worth it. I can't change the system, or I can't change this job. I'm going somewhere else. And they make that big sort of change, or they leave medicine altogether. And seeing that big change have that impact that they want, and really discovering that they can do that and that life can be better is it's really encouraging.
Lots of people have said, I thought maybe it was depression. And then I was like, no, this is not depression. So you also said something similar to that kind of self-scan that we do as educated doctors, that is this has some features that are like depression, but it seems different. What do you think the main differences are? Because I think we know about depression because we get taught about it, and we know that it's not, but it's this thing that seems similar. So most people have done a scan and thought, is this postnatal depression? Is this depression? No. But what is it then, you know?
Yeah, and it's not surprising that we find them a bit confusing, considering even in the research they've been confused a lot. And in the early years, going back to like the 70s and 80s, there was quite a long time there where a lot of people were saying, well, is it basically just depression anyway? And so they just studied depression instead and felt like it wasn't a different thing. And it took a while to recognize that, no, actually, this is quite a distinct entity. If we're looking at things like the World Health Organization, they actually talk about it specifically in relation to work. I think it applies to life more broadly, but it often is in relation to work. And so sometimes it's quite variable, like most things. It's hard to make hard and fast rules, but often we see this quite direct link with work. So you might say with depression, you might see it as a more of a pervasive low mood, whereas with burnout, it might be that actually you get to the weekend and people feel pretty good because they're away from work, and then you get to Sunday night and they get that sinking feeling and things go downhill. Or same thing, you know, if you take a few weeks off, you go on leave, you go on a nice holiday, and you manage to actually enjoy things there and find that pretty good, and then you come back and it gets worse again. So that's probably one of the big differences. You also just often don't see the physical side effects in the same way. So it's less often that I see things like the loss of appetite and loss of interest in things, but it is so variable, and I'm really not surprised that, yeah, people feel that big overlap between them. But if you're looking at the cause as well, so, you know, with depression, there's often quite a strong organic cause there, and you've got triggers that lead to it as well. Whereas with burnout, you can usually just really clearly identify those triggers in life that are building up and leading to it, and then you deal with those triggers. It's I'm not explaining that very well, but it's tricky. And again, that's also another reason why it's so important to see a GP or somebody, because often you see burnout and depression, or burnout and anxiety
hanging out together.
So it is important, obviously, to sort that out and work out, because if someone's got a really good major depression going, then they need that treated at the same time as burnout.
And the other thing that has been a kind of recurring theme, and definitely for me, is thinking about our junior doctor years, which I think are inherently unhealthy across the board, and hopefully getting better. But as a PGY 13, I think I am, 14 or something in that realm, I think they were pretty terrible when we were junior, when I was, I'm saying we, because I feel like you're similar, but
somewhere around there, I haven't worked it out. But
and I have challenged myself in a reasonably unhealthy way over the years when things get hard. I've been pretty good at heading it off at the turn, you know, like I've made some pretty dramatic changes in my career. When things feel like it's all getting too hard, I'll take a swift left, and I'm like, you know, quite good at, you know, guarding myself against it until recently, when it's all just become too much. And I think, but why? Because this is so much easier than what I used to do when I was a junior doctor, when I had two small kids and I was working 60 hours a week. And, do you know, how come it's now, and why? Because I've survived more than this. And, you know, even saying this out loud, I can already pick flaws in this thinking, but it's been quite, I've been holding on to it, but this is not the worst I've ever lived through. You know, how come now, when I've lived through more? But I've come to the realization, partly through speaking to everyone, that actually, because that is still part of this burnout, those 60-hour weeks and that horrible time I had as a junior doctor 10 years ago is still part of this burnout. That's still part of what makes me who I am today.
Absolutely. It's such a cumulative thing. And even before the junior doctor years, we've been through medical school first. And, you know, at the time you feel like medical school is really stressful. And then you get to internship and you're like, oh, med school was so cruisy compared to this. What was I thinking? And then it all adds together. And, you know, the talk about burnout as being this consequence of chronic stress, because it is that impact that has on us for so long. And because we self-select in medicine, such a resilient, driven group of people to even have got to that point of internship, let alone beyond, you just have to be. We're very, very good at just battling on and suppressing a lot of things and just continuing on. We don't deal with those emotions and the traumas and all of that that arises as it goes. We just push on because we feel like that's what we've got to do, and we can do it. We've got that capacity and that resilience to do it, so we just keep on going. And it often isn't till later in career that we see that burnout really kicking in. When they've done studies, they've often found some of the highest levels of burnout in those first couple of junior doctor years in terms of the symptoms that they see, but you see it all throughout career, particularly at those times where you get a change in responsibility. So I'm particularly looking out at it in the interns, but then also when people start as registrars or go from junior to senior registrars or getting their fellowship, those times. But it also can just sometimes feel quite unexpected. And often I get people who come to me and they feel like, but why now? You know, I can't say why. I've been working as a consultant for 6 years. Why now? You know, usually after a few long conversations, you really get to the bottom of why now, and it's complicated. Yeah. And instead of
looking at what we've survived as resilience, we can look at it as something that has actually taken away some of our resilience, you know, like, because I think along the way, we've all had people leave whatever pathway we're on due to being overwhelmed by it. And so I think as a person who stayed on the track, you know, it's like the beep test. And you've made it to the next beep, and so you feel quite strong because you know that people have been taken out by what you're doing, but there comes a time when the beeps just get too fast and you're knackered, you know. So yeah, I think
absolutely,
yeah.
And our resilience, I suppose, is always going up and down. You know, if we're thinking about it, is that what are those resources that we have, and what are those demands that we have upon us? It's always fluctuating, isn't it? Like, what's going on with the kids at that point? Have we got sick parents? Have we got exams coming up? that's always going up and down. And then, yeah, what's happening with our work is if we happen to have a time where our work is particularly stressful and demanding at the same time as we've got all these other things that are lowering our capacity, then that's often when that sort of crisis sort of feeling hits. Whereas if you get it just sort of going in the right pattern of work stresses are there when other things are less, then you sort of manage to get through.
And the other thing that people have brought up, which I've never really considered, is the protective factor of the junior doctor rotations. So no matter how bad things are, something new is on the horizon and quite different usually.
Mm.
And as you get more senior, the differences between rotations change and things stay a little bit more the same. And when you fellow, depending on what you choose to do, there's no end. You're doing your job and there's no new rotation that you can say, I just need to make it to the 30th of June and then I'm out of here. So I wonder if, even though they're hard and they are hard in other ways, those rotations actually keep things turning over in a way that you lose when you fellow and then it's all on you to make the decision.
I hadn't really thought about it in quite that way of the short rotations back then. One thing I've definitely been aware of is the idea as a junior doctor, you kind of feel this sense of hope that, oh, well, if I can get through the internship, residency will be better because everybody says that. Okay, well, then I can get onto a training program because that's my end goal to be a consultant. You get onto the program. Okay, if I can just get through my exams, things will be better. Then you, okay, if I can just get my fellowship, it'll be better. And then you get to fellowship and you go, hang on a minute.
I've been duped.
This was yeah. It. This is what I've been working for my entire
false
life.
False advertising, man. False advertising.
This is not what I was imagining. There's no next bit to hope for now.
Yeah.
And I think for a lot of people, there is a bit of disillusionment maybe with what they hoped or dreamt or thought it would be like and what that reality is.
Mm. And I think as well, it's like I do feel like somewhere in medicine they've employed the McDonald's advertising campaign to keep people in the dark about the fact that you don't have to get on the training program at any given time. You can just keep doing jobs, you know? And I think even just that knowledge, and that's one of the things that made me do this little series, just the knowledge that you can get off the treadmill at any time you like and still get paid, you know? Once you've passed internship, you can get a job anyway, you know.
Absolutely. And I think it's really hard to see that perspective of what medicine has to offer as an intern. And I'm so encouraged to see that it's much more visible now. You know, when I first started doing this 5 years ago, no one talked really about anything except choosing a specialty and usually a clinical specialty. And seeing things like the Creative Careers in Medicine group opening up has really opened everyone's eyes, I think, to those opportunities. And, you know, more and more now, instead of it being people who have become burnt out through their career, then thinking, what else can I do? Even people at their internship are thinking, actually, I can just already see that clinical medicine might not be for me, and looking at those other opportunities. And I think that's really good because you don't know when you're 17 and apply for medical school often exactly how your personality fits and your lifestyle goals match with your medical goals and all that kind of thing. So by the time you get to the end of it, clinical medicine doesn't suit everybody. Mm. So knowing that there are all these other options that you can go into things like public health or health IT or pharmacological medicine, all those other sort of parts of medicine, and that's without even talking about, you know, leaving medicine altogether, that there are all those other options. And so to not achieve whatever clinical specialty you always had in mind doesn't have to be a failure. It's just sort of part of that journey of figuring out what works.
And I think the medical mums are good at this because necessity is the mother of invention. And mat leave, you know, often people do surgical assisting because they're on mat leave or stress test lists.
Yeah.
And all those that are, you know, people can just make a living doing that for a while, for as long as they want, really. And I think that idea is a well-kept secret that you can be a resident for a long time. You can be a service reg for a long time in a job that you like. You don't have to jump on a training program just because there's some, you know, I don't know, some unwritten rule that this must happen now in your career, you know. So
absolutely. And I sometimes wonder about some of the specialty areas with not such good reputations. What's going to happen once everybody finds out about all these alternatives? Yeah. Hopefully we've still got another people interested in it and keen enough to go through it. Or maybe it'll be one of those things that actually forces change. Yeah. If they can no longer recruit enough candidates because there are alternatives out there and people start seeing that, then hopefully that might be something that actually finally drives some of the change that we want to see.
Thank you so much for sharing your story with us and sharing your time with us today, Amy. Can you tell us one more time where we might find out more information about the Burnout Project?
Yes, just go to theburnoutproject.com.au and there's information there about the burnout quiz and packages and books and counselling and everything else. Thank you.